For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's exceptional cyber savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top-brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 1-800-BUY-DELL. That's 1-800-BUY-DELL.
Hello, it is Tuesday, September 24th, 2019. I am currently recording these ads from the comfort of my living room. There's some cat piss around my feet. My beautiful dog Valerie laying to my right side. And the insane corgi named Chuck running laps around me. We just got off a plane from New York City. I got a chance to do get up this morning. Well, yesterday morning. Talked a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I always enjoy it, you know, get to talk a little shit. Then we recorded the podcast. And then at the end of the podcast, you're going to hear a hilarious insight into my life right now that is just a nonstop circus of content. I'm having a great time with it. And today's show, just like every other podcast we put out, is brought to you by the greatest sponsor in the history of sponsors, the presenting sponsor of the Pat McAfee Show 2.0 podcast, our beautiful friends at SeatGeek. Yes, SeatGeek scans all the other ticket buying platforms to make sure you're getting the best bang for your buck, the best tickets available for the best prices available are available for you from our friends at SeatGeek. And right now, you use promo code PAT, you get $10 off your first order. Promo code McAfee, $20 off your first order. Wow. So go see a game live. For instance, you should have went to that Tulane-Houston game last Thursday that I got a chance to call down New Orleans. There was a lot of tickets still available. They didn't fill the place up all the way. And it was electric from beginning to end. Hot as balls down New Orleans. Hot as balls. But it would have been a lot of fun. Theater, music, comedy, sports, you name it, SeatGeek's got the tickets for you. Use those two promo codes. We need you to do it, business purposes. If we want to continue to utilize microphones in studios that are way too big, that we should not be in, we need you to use those promo codes. And also, I need you to use those promo codes so you can live a little bit. You're alive, but are you living? Go live and experience something live with our friends at SeatGeek. Speaking of friends, I think we made a new one today. Damn slapdick in here.
I saw you in cut-off sleeves on another podcast.
You caught me on a day I had to go on ESPN, man.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, Disney and they fucking, you know. Hey. I walked in there one day in jorts and like a button down.
Yeah.
And they let me on the air. And then as I was walking out, like 10 people stopped me. They're like, hey, maybe next time we, maybe next time we, oh, we like what you're, but maybe next, a lot of maybe next time, maybe next time.
Yeah, the maybe. Yeah. Maybe means definitely.
Hey, we were talking. We were all talking back here. We think you should put some fucking pants on the next time you come in here. Robert Iger and Disney run this place, not whatever slapdick operation you're used to.
You know what's funny is I just wanted to see the layout of your show, and I saw you interview Francesa, and you had like a tank top on, and I'm like, oh, dude, I'm great in a t-shirt. I'm like, a t-shirt? I'm overdressed. This guy's got a tank top. This guy cut off sleeves talking to Francesa. I thought.
I know. Yeah. That was, hey.
I love Francesa, dude. He's number one.
I had no idea who the hell he was.
He's number one. He's the best. I've been listening to him since like 03, 02.
Are we recording?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Okay, good. We're recording. Good. Yeah, Francesa, I had no idea who the hell he was until I just learned about him on the internet. The at back after this, the Funhouse account that tweets out, they steal the videos from his app that he charges people for, and they tweet it out. And his videos just started showing up in my timeline. I'm like, I love this fucking guy. And everybody's like, he's the guy. That's the sports pope.
Yeah, he's the guy. Like, he's right a lot. And, like, the knock on him is, like, he'll cut people off. It is funny, though, because, like, sometimes he can be brutal, where a guy will be like, you know, I'll tell you something. This guy at bat, you're an idiot. Cut him off. And, like, the guy didn't even say anything yet. And I'm in the car going, Mike, you got to let the guy finish the point. Like, if he loves the second baseman, as soon as he hears that, the guy's out.
Well, I mean, I enjoy what he did to Shermer last week, and Shermer has cut off completely any future Francesa.
Did he?
Yeah, he said he would never go back on because he said, your team stinks.
I mean, right? you guys are terrible.
I mean, the defense is just,
Joining us now, you hear his voice. Ty Schmidt is here. Foxy and Zito are back in the control room. We're recording this live from 4 World Trade, which is still insane to me. We are 50 floors above Earth. Just staring down at buildings. It's a pretty cool little thing if you're watching the video at home. If not, we are being joined by a hilarious individual. A man whose first album came out in 2015.
Yes.
Called Night at the Stand.
Night at the Stand.
It was number one on iTunes for a bit.
Yep, and then I think 4 on Billboard. I was really excited about it.
Yeah, you should have been.
Yeah, it was a lot of work traveling to get it done, and it worked out great.
Stand-up comedian, big-time New Yorker, Giants fan.
Yes.
Through and through.
Giants fan. Yeah, Giants, Yankees, Knicks.
And let's now go. His special is currently streaming through Comedy Central.
That's right.
Bill Burr presents.
Paul Verzey, I'll Say This.
And ladies and gentlemen, he's saying that. Paul Verzey is here with us. Let's go, Paul!
Thank you. Thanks for having me, buddy.
No, oh, you're guest hosting. I'm very thankful that you came through. We've been trying to make this happen for a couple weeks now. My people have. I don't know about your people. I enjoy stand-up comedians, especially ones that are into sports. Not all stand-up comedians are into sports.
That's true.
Is sports make a play in your stand-up routines? Do you reference it a lot?
Early a lot. Like during my, like right around probably the material I was doing right before I did Night at the Stand, I talk about sports. I talk about, you know, I used to joke about gambling on sports and all kinds of stuff like that. So, but I'm a big football guy. Just everything except really, and I know people get mad when I say this, but everything but hockey. Just not hockey, man.
I'm a big Penguins fan.
I don't know why. Yeah, but see, I have friends that are from Boston and Pittsburgh that are big, but in New York, it's like I think at the time I was coming up,
everybody sucked.
It was the Knicks. Well, actually, the Rangers won in 94. But the Knicks were like going to the finals or the Eastern Conference Finals against the Bulls.
Yep.
You know, the Yankees started to turn a corner. So, and I was young, so that's what it was, you know.
Well, that's why I hate baseball, though, because the Pirates, whenever I was growing up, they were in the middle of a 20-year suck fest. Literally a 20-year suck fest. And in Pittsburgh, the Steelers are winning and the Penguins are winning. So that other team, if you suck, it's hard for me to really want you to do well. So I'm against baseball for that reason.
Are you from Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was just there. Love it. Underrated. One of the most underrated cities in the United States. I'm not just saying that. I actually said that the other day. I mean, the one thing that's a little overrated, though.
Easy.
The Permanis. The Permanis thing is like a loaf of bread with French fries in the middle of it. Like, I was. Can I say I had to shit for five? Can I say that on this?
Oh, yeah.
You can say shit for 5 days, yeah, but you cannot say what you just said about Permanis like
love
that.
I love Permanis.
No, but you just said it was the most overrated thing you've ever heard.
I ate it at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was all bread.
Yeah.
It was all bread, man. Like, it was big bread and then French fries. And while you're eating it, it's the greatest idea ever.
Yeah.
It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. We did 2 shows. Yeah. Everything was good. And the next day, I'm going, why did I do that? Why did I go there?
Yeah, a lot of regret in that Permani sandwich there.
Yeah, but I love the city. I love the PNC Park. I think it's the nicest baseball field in Major League Baseball.
Incredible field, incredible park, terrible baseball team. The thing about Pittsburgh is they like to drink. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. They are a work hard, play hard town. There's supposed to be a tax on alcohol they put in, and Allegheny County is the county that Pittsburgh is in. An Allegheny County alcohol tax was put in. And they expected like a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
They brought in like $7 million. And they're like, well, we got a fucking alcohol problem. And now we have a lot of money all of a sudden out of nowhere. Pittsburgh is a good town. Good people. Really good people.
Yeah, I had a great time. Good comedy crowd. I did 6 hours of stand-up. I did 6 shows at the new improv there. Well, they renovated the improv.
Yep.
So they did. And like, there's like no heckling. It's like almost to the point where I was like, "Do you guys this good?" Like, I was like waiting for like one of you guys has to be drunk. Like, can somebody yell something? They were just like into it, great, respectful. Like, thanks for coming to our city. I loved it.
How long have you been doing stand-up?
Professionally for like 15, 16 years. Professionally, I started. You know, it's hard in New York to get up a lot when you first start. You know, you have like no material and no club's gonna put you on. So I was doing contests. I was doing like the urban circuit, like anywhere I can, like, hey, let me try, you know? And then it just started to build that.
Why'd you get into it? You're the funny guy, your friends?
You know what? I was like Eddie Murphy, man. Eddie Murphy as a kid, 10 years old, my father took me to the movie theater to see Raw, and I was just locked. And that's when, you know, Beverly Hills Cop and 48 Hours. So like Eddie was like a rock star. And just watching Raw, how like it was like, oh, this isn't just comedy. This is like just a whole thing. And I would do Eddie Murphy impressions, and people would be like, this guy could tell stories. This guy's funny. So, and then I just did my first open mic at 21, and it didn't go great. So I rescheduled it to have something a little more planned, because I thought the first time I was gonna be, I didn't even have anything written. I was like, I'll just wing it.
Spitball it up her.
And it was terrible. Like, I was like, oh, the cigarette pack says may cause cancer. It does cause cancer. It was like, there was no joke. It was just the dumbest shit to say. And then the next week I felt bad because I was like, I could do better than that. So I said to the guy, like, he signed up for every Tuesday. And I said, sign me up for next Tuesday. And I wrote in my room all week, like 6 minutes, wrote it out. And I had some friends come, and it had its own bar crowd, and it went well. And then I just started calling, like, cold calling New York City clubs, being like, can I get on your new talent night? You know?
Yeah, because there's people. Gary Goldman is a guy that I've got a chance to follow along. He won't follow me back, which I appreciate and respect. I mean, he's too smart of a man to do that. But I've met him in person a few times. I've got a chance to watch him perform. And to think about how he operates, there in New York, there's so many comedy places. Guys are doing like 15 sets a week, like it just powering through them. Like, all right, go, you do one set here, you walk down the street, you do a set here at this time, then you go here. And the comedy scene in New York is a real one.
You can get up a lot. Like, you can do, like, the Comedy Cellar has 3 locations. So you can just literally go, like, I've done one, walked around the corner, done another, and then if you got to drive out and do something like that.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
When did you know you had something? Like, a year in, you're like, you know what, I don't suck at this.
I started to realize that everybody sucked at that level, but I was one of the better bad ones.
Yeah. Like, that feels good.
So it's like, as long as, like, you're at the top of your class coming up of sucking, and then you're like, oh, well, you know, and then it just, I always wanted to be one of the top guys of the group that was coming up. And I started to feel that happening, and I started to feel that with the response from the audience. And I was like, all right, maybe, you know, and then people coming up going, hey, man, I really thought you were one of the, and I was like, oh, man, maybe it went from something to try to, like, maybe I could do this, to then I think I could get good at this. And then it was like, this just blinders on. I'm doing it.
Good for you.
My dream, man.
Not a lot of people find that in their life. There's a lot of people still searching for that in their 50s, 60s.
You're 100%. I'm glad I was in my early 20s, but I heard that you do stand up.
I did. I retired.
You're done.
I've taken a hiatus. And it's because you're one of your fucking friends.
Who's that?
Well, I watched Chappelle's special on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I watched it through, and I said, I should probably never do stand-up again. And then I watched Paper Tiger.
Yeah.
And I was like, I should never fucking be stand-up. That is
Bill's the reason.
Yeah, yeah. Bill was the tip of the iceberg, because, I mean, just watching a, like yourself, like a master comedian put together a set is something that I would just go up there and spitball for 90 minutes. I would just go up there and bullshit for 90 minutes, tell a bunch of stories, couple callbacks, keep it moving. But just to be a master of your craft, I had a real self-awareness moment where I was like, you know what? If people can pay and see that show, or they can pay and see my show, I should probably take a fucking hike for a while.
But so you're a professional football player, so imagine the time that you put into that and the time you put into kicking. Imagine if you did that with it's the same thing. It would be like if all of a sudden I went to a punting, fuck, you know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I would be like, hey, get the fuck off the field.
Yeah, Paul, that went 15 yards the wrong way. Just get out, yeah.
No, but it was real, though. I watched that Paper Tiger, and I was like, holy shit. But you put together that Paper Tiger and Chappelle special.
Yeah, back-to-back was legendary, yeah.
It really was. And as a guy who's inside the comedy world, in listening to their sets, it felt like there was a real moment where those two comedians who are at the top of the craft, right?
Yeah.
White guy, black guy. So representing literally the top of the class here for everybody.
Yep.
It felt like they had to do comedy a justice. Like, hey, we got to really take, because comedy was starting to get attacked. Yeah. Every joke was getting overthought.
Yep.
Oh, well, why do you think that? Well, it's a fucking joke. Like, just take it easy. It seems like Bill and Dave had a conversation, like, maybe in a comedy store in L.A. late night back in the back. They were like, hey, we got to do this or nobody else will. Do you feel the same way?
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think comedy needed it. And I was actually just talking to the great Michael O'Brien over there about...
Yeah, who is he? He's a tall, skinny guy.
He's a great friend. He's a publicist. He's the best. But we were just...
Good guy. Very good guy. Tall and skinny, though. Very very tall and skinny.
All right, you don't have to rub it in. I know I'm 5'8". Relax.
Yeah, next to you, it was quite a...
You kept emphasizing the tall. Really tall. He's really tall, unlike you. Really tall.
You didn't deserve that,
the
Paul.
Nice tall guy. No. Me and Michael were talking about, like, I said this, and I hate to say this about my home city, but I feel like New York crowds have changed a little bit for the worse, where, like, you'll be on stage sometimes at one of these clubs, and not all... And it's still, listen, New York stand-up is still incredibly great crowds and smart, but you can feel when you say certain things in certain rooms, you could feel this, Well, where is he, you know, like I'm not, I won't get into the joke, but I'm doing this bit.
Oh, please do, bury this podcast.
I'm just doing this bit about the WNBA, and I was just talking about how it doesn't entertain me, but this woman, she just crossed her arms, and she's just looking at me, and she's shaking her head, and I was saying, like, this woman doesn't know that I have a little girl that mm-hmm. I want to have to play sports and equal pay and equal rights. She just looked at me as a misogynist, and it's like, no, I just don't like the WNBA because it sucks. It's just not entertaining. It's just not entertaining.
You're not allowed to think that.
But it has nothing to do with women. It has to do with it doesn't entertain me because I, you know, so and that's the thing. And people, like, they want to hear the explanation. So, but you know what? You do adjust to it. But Bill and Chappelle, what they did was they let people know, like, you're in a comedy club. You're in a comedy club. So if there was ever a time to just put it all down, let the guard, and just have a couple of drinks, enjoy the silliness, enjoy the thing, and it was really needed. So I think it came at a really perfect time.
Hello, we interrupt your currently scheduled program to let you know a horrifying fact. On average, a burglary happens once every 23 seconds in the United States of America. That little piece of information comes from the FBI. I assume it's real, and it scares the hell out of me. Approximately 2 million burglaries are reported a year in the United States of America. 83% of burglars admitted that they specifically look to see if there's an alarm system. These burglars do terrible things, but 83% of them at least check out if they're going to get fucking busted or not. 20 out of every 1,000 households were burglarized in 2017. These are some alarming stats. But what's crazy is that only 1 in 5 homes have home security. Maybe because companies really don't make it easy. They make it difficult to sign up. To find your security cameras, you got to go through a bunch of hell. To turn it on, it's a pain in the ass. To turn it off, it's a pain in the ass. There's false alarms all the damn time. But not with our friends at SimpliSafe. Round the clock, 24/7, video monitoring of everything you could possibly need. It's won a ton of awards from CNET to New York Times Wirecutter. Prices are always fair and honest. Around the clock monitoring is just $15 a month. SimpliSafe protects every door, window, and room all day, all night. But one thing that truly makes SimpliSafe stand out is their video verification technology. When other home security systems are triggered, a lot of the time police assume it's a false alarm, and the call goes right to the bottom of the list. But not with SimpliSafe, no way. Using their video verification technology, they are able to visually confirm that the break-in is happening, allowing police to get to the scene 3.5 times faster than other home security companies. Right now, listeners of this show, SimpliSafe has a huge deal going on. Go to simplisafe.com/McAfee and get free shipping and a money-back guarantee. That's simplisafe.com/McAfee today. simplisafe.com/McAfee. I use SimpliSafe at the house. I use it at the office. I'm a big fan of it. Every once in a while, it'll catch a hilarious moment. Like whenever this dog, Chuck, just decides to shit on the floor. SimpliSafe will also do that for you, too. Things to think about. $15 a month for some comfort and security. SimpliSafe.com/McAfee. SimpliSafe.com/McAfee. Back to the combo.
I think it was. And it was met with some harsh criticism.
For sure.
Yeah, both of them were met with some harsh criticism.
Always going to be.
By the people, by the way, that none of us would ever want to hang out with, right? Never, ever would want to hang out with any of those humans. Just
no.
Leave us the fuck alone anyways. But they can change some things. And I'm happy that Dave and Bill kind of stepped up for that.
Well, that's actually a really smart thing you said, because I remember Rest His Soul, Patrice O'Neill would say, you know, when people would walk out, right? I remember opening for Patrice, one of the greats, and people would walk out. And then their mentality is they were never going to be my fan anyway. If you're going to if you're going to come to my show and listen to me say something and then get up and leave, you were never going to come to my theater show when I grew. You were never going to
Never going to buy anything.
You were never you were going to hear that somewhere else and get up and leave. So as a matter of fact, it's better to weed them out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Get out. Because that I just want to fill that seat with somebody that wants to hear somebody be honest and real and not get offended.
And that's the same thing with people online who, now granted, I don't want to say cyberbullying is overrated, but it really is. Like, who gives a fuck what somebody on the internet has to say? That person probably will never be a friend of mine anyways. And I, by the way, I'd probably hate them too. If they hate me, I'd probably hate them too. Let's keep it moving. But it seems like we're kind of turning the tide on all these things. I hope so. I think we're kind of turning back.
I hope so. I don't know, you know, but I stay away. Another thing we were talking about before the show is like, I got to just, you say something on Twitter and people don't understand.
Oh, you said some awesome shit on Twitter, by the way. Hold on. I was looking into your Twitter there because you were coming on the show. Your last tweet is one that I think resonates with a lot of people that listen to this show. It was last night. When will actors and actresses realize that their political speeches at award shows will never change anything or make a difference? Shut up and say thank you and leave. That is such a hilarious thought. Because every time somebody wins an award, hey, you read these lines better than everybody else read their lines this year. Congratulations.
Right.
Here's your moment to do whatever you want to do. By the way, I look at it as an entertainment show, so I think you should be entertaining. I told my lady this last night while we were watching it a little bit during the Browns-Rams game. I said, I want to let you know, I ever win an award, like, it's going to be an entertaining fucking speech. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to sit here and just thank everybody. I'm going to put on, like, probably, it's going to be a minute-long bit, probably, if I had to guess. Yeah. And my lady's like, I would like to be thanked. I was like, well, I'll say thanks to all the people that are supposed to be thanked. That involves you there at the beginning. She's like, no, I want a single shout-out. I'm like, well, we'll see if that ever happens. But nobody ever utilizes that for entertainment. Instead, exactly what you said, it's all about let's change the world on this minute thing. And it's like, when there's 45 of the let's change the world, yours kind of gets caught up in the mess.
And that's what I said. And people will look at that and go, well, what? Is he not for what that person said? It's not about that. See, that's the thing. It's not about that. And unfortunately, you have to, today, you have to explain that. And people that really know me know that, of course, I'm for, like, I'm just saying when
we want to make the world a better place.
Of course, you want the world to be a better place, and of course if it's your moment, but when it just keeps getting redundant and it's the same thing, you know, like I remember years ago the Beastie Boys, they said something and I remember going, whether people believe that or not, at least they're talking about something different. Like, it was like an issue going on at the time. Yeah. And they talk, this just seems like it's like, you know, my parents came here from, and it was just as like, what? Like, I'm going back to the Browns game.
Yeah, well, and that game stunk, by the
way. And I know, I know for me, it's like, it did. It was terrible.
That was a tough game to watch.
But it's like, any ordinary American, it's impossible to take any, like, account of that, because it's like, this person's an elitist. They're in a better position than anyone else, you know, and watching it, it's like, how can you fucking take anything they're saying seriously? Like, it's just, you know, they're not talking to you.
When you're hopping on a G5 with champagne after you got an Emmy. You're hopping on a G5 with an Emmy, and there's champagne, like, at a red carpet of the steps of the jet you're about to get on. Okay, like, it's a little much. It's just a little much. But people will take, and that's what sucks, is people will go on and go, oh, so I guess when that second guy spoke, you're not for, and I'm like, no, it actually has nothing to do with that. And you gotta watch, man, because people will come at you, man.
You can't win with everybody. That's just the world.
You're never going to win with everybody. And if you do win with everybody, you're doing something wrong.
Hey, if you stand for nothing, you fall for anything. People forget, Paul.
I love how you started that like Russell Crowe. Gladiator. Hey, you just stared at me.
I just want to let you know I had a very deep thought coming. I just want to let you know that there was a little bit of a curveball coming.
I was waiting for you to rip the shirt off with a metal chest guard.
Hey, you're a big-time Giants fan.
Big time.
This past weekend.
Oh, Danny Dimes.
Oh, Danny Dimes swept the world, okay?
Oh, my God.
A couple years ago, Eli Manning got benched for Geno Smith, a guy who had been punched out by a linebacker in another locker room. The entire Giants fan base was up in arms. Why are we disrespecting Eli like that? This guy traded himself from the Chargers to come here, won a Super Bowl. He doesn't deserve it. Now, with Danny Dimes, it feels like it's a completely different narrative. And also, Eli,
now you're like, ship him out of here. Get a bus. I don't want to see number 10 on the sidelines. Get a bus.
No, but it does feel as this is a very different world now that we live in because of the success that Daniel Jones had. If he loses that game, which Matt Gay was a 34-yard field goal away from that happening to old Danny Dimes, do you think there's a different narrative today if that ball goes through the uprights?
I think the excitement in New York City, and I think like the Post and the Daily News and all that stuff would still be like, you know, the future looks good, you know, because he really didn't make mistakes. He threw, what, 336, two touchdowns, ran for two. And to have, and the thing that people saw as a New York Giants fan was Eli doesn't have the speed to score there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, he's running like he's got leg weights on, right? So by the time he gets to the 10, he's going to get killed. By the time he gets to the 10, it's like quicksand. And, you know, it's not where Jones just saw. Jones just was like, oh, nobody's here. And he runs it up, and you're like, oh, my God. So I think even if the kicker makes that Gay, if he makes that 34-yarder and we lose a heartbreaker like that, it's still positive. But now, the fact that we won, it's like the savior, But they got to be careful with that because the defense stinks.
Stinks.
The defense stinks, and like stinks. It doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. You know, that was the one thing about Eli. I know that Eli couldn't do these things, but, you know, now Saquon's out. It's going to be tough. I mean, the Giants, but we got the Redskins next week. We might go 2-2.
Hey.
We might go 2-2.
Redskins bad at football, too.
Yeah.
That's good news for you Giants, guys.
Were you a fan of the pick initially when they drafted
him? No way, Paul. No,
I'm on record on my podcast. I got evidence, guys. I got evidence.
Okay.
I said this. The Giants go all in on six. You got to like that from an organization to go, look, they probably sat down with him and go, listen, you're our guy. And we're not going to let you fall down to 17. You're our guy. So for that thing, I liked him. I was a little worried. He's coming from Duke. It's not a big program.
They sucked.
You know.
But he's also playing with Duke guys.
Right.
That doesn't get talked about enough.
I saw him. So my birthday is Veterans Day, right? November 11th is my birthday. 2 years ago, we go to Army. We go to West Point. It's not far. And we go watch Army play Duke. And I swear to God, this defensive end came around on Army. And when I tell you, I thought Daniel Jones, like a cartoon, was embedded in the ground. I go, this kid stinks. I go, this guy sucks. He's just a slow, white shithead. That's what I thought.
Are you on record saying that, too? Just so we know.
This guy is just, and then all of a sudden the next year, he had a good year. And I'm going, wait, is that the number 17 we saw get slaughtered? But when they went in on him and they were like, listen, every time he's improved, he's super smart. He's like Eli, but more athletic. I was like, you know what? I respect an organization for going all in on a guy that they were like, this is either going to be a disaster or we're going to look great. But at least they went in.
The entire world buried Daniel Jones. And this is my thought. It wasn't just Giants fans that said, this is a terrible pick. It wasn't just Giants sports talk radio show hosts like Francesa who won in very hard against the pick because he felt like with Eli, he could still play winning football. Let's draft a piece around him to at least give him a chance. But for me, I think what happened to Daniel Jones when everybody buried him.
Yeah.
Anybody that had a platform that probably shouldn't have a platform to display their opinions went after Daniel Jones. It was literally the mockery of the draft was how bad of a pick the Giants had.
They booed Daniel Jones at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
I think about how that's got to feel. Like, he's at a Yankee game. Like, he just moved here.
Hey, I just wanted to watch a fucking game.
Can I get a hot dog? Like, what the fuck? I just want a ballpark Frank and a cold one.
And all of a sudden, no, I didn't ask to be on the fucking jumbotron.
They're like bumping him over urinals like, move, asshole. I got a piss worse than you do. He's like, what?
Well, where'd you go? Duke? Yeah, that's what I thought. No, but everybody. And I think that hardened him, right? So I told this story on my radio show. When I got arrested for public intoxication, nobody knew that I was even on the Colts. It was my second year. Hunter Smith was there for 10 years. Nobody even had a clue that I was the punter for the team. But as soon as I got arrested for that, my mugshot didn't look great. I mean, it was a tough mugshot. I mean, public intoxication. That's what's going to happen.
Nobody's going to look at a mugshot and be like, did you get new headshots?
It was my only professional shot I'd ever gotten in my life up to that point. Look at the star, please. Look at the star. Am I supposed to smile? Don't smile. Oh my God, kids are going to see this. It was an awkward shot.
Yeah.
Right? I was wearing some murderer shirt because they gave me clothes because I showed up shirtless, obviously. And they just said, what size are you? I was like, XL. They were like, what size pants? I was like, 38. They're like, don't know if we have 38. Let's dig deep into the murderer's pile here. So they were just giving me somebody's clothes, right? When people check into jail, I guess they never come out. They just give their clothes to other people. So I had these FUBU pants on, and I had this dark gray shirt. It looked bad, right?
Yeah.
But that was my introduction to a lot of people. To Earth. and I got buried by everybody. I'm talking late night show hosts were using me as a punchline, like, oh, the punter did this.
Really?
Everybody in town was mocking me. The news was, we are live from the scene of the crime. It is alleged that he went into the canal right here. But the whole thing, I got buried. And I got to a point where I was, like, very depressed, you know? I was like, holy shit, like, I really embarrassed everybody. But then once I got past that, and my mom was like, who gives a fuck, man? You've been drunker than this before. I mean, this is not the worst thing.
Oh, my God, that's such a great mom. Good to be lady. Like, you think you're a piece of shit over that. Remember ninth grade?
you remember when you pissed in our hallway? You remember that off of what was it? Mike's Hard Lemonades? No, but once I got past that, I realized...
You wiped your ass with the dog.
Once I got past that, I got, like, hardened by it all. I was like, man, none of these people have any idea who I am.
Exactly.
None of these people have any clue who I am. And they're just burying me for one night of my life, which they don't even know the other 10 nights that could potentially be worse than this. But they're just burying me. I got to a point where I didn't give a fuck anymore. I was like, I don't care what anybody thinks. And to be honest, it made me who I am. I think Daniel Jones is experiencing that same thing where he doesn't give a fuck anymore. Because you look at that throw where he put it in the corner to Sterling Shepard. There was an easy ball he could have thrown too. But whenever you finally have that moment where you're like, I don't give a fuck. And he throws, it's like a freeing feeling. And I feel like Daniel Jones is experiencing that much like I did.
I think not only are you right, but I'm going to take it a step further.
Let's go.
I think Aaron Rodgers waiting in that green room in that draft day with a chip on the shoulder.
Yep.
You know, I think Tom Brady going for a walk with his dad on day three going, I might not get in the league.
Yeah.
You know, when you saw Tom Brady's body.
It's looked a like, story, right?
You know, yeah. You know, he didn't look like some big, he just was a guy, he didn't even play a lot. And he's just like, you know
He
what?
Looked bad in that
And then
photo.
You get in a game, and I even think it's better when you're a backup and they don't expect. And then you're like, you know what? This is house money. Yep. This is gravy now.
Yep. Everybody thinks I'm the worst draft pick in the history of drafts. Now it's time for me to just go ball out against an average Buccaneer team. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Still, without Saquon Barkley, I think it made him better. I think that draft night experience is only going to make him better. And I loved watching him just fucking go for it.
I think that really, now that we're talking about this, I never even had this thought until right now on your show. But I think opening for Burr, you know, I would open for Burr. And I got to open for Burr at Carnegie Hall and Madison Square Garden. But also all these amazing theaters across Canada and the United States. And having that guy be my best friend and mentor. But I would go out and there'd be 2,500, 3,800 people there to see Bill. And either me and another comedian or just me. And I'll go, let me give these people a punch in the face too.
Yeah.
And it would lift me because I'm like, because I want to ultimately get here.
Yes.
And I got the best guy in the game believing in me, thinking I'm funny and putting me here. So let me not only for him, but let me show, you know, I want to show that for my time, I'm going to make an impact. And I think that that's what happens with people when you're either doubted or you're kind of lower on the thing, on the pole at the time, the totem pole. I think it's the same thing. So I agree with you 100%.
Well, here I am sitting in my living room talking in the phone all by myself again. Just hit some vitamins, feeling pretty good. Also feeling good about my bets this upcoming weekend because I have the greatest app on planet Earth when it comes to being a smart gambler. Yes, the Action Network app is the one-stop shop for your gambling knowledge. It's not really gambling anymore now that I use the Action Network. It's actually investing. Yes, investing in my brain. My brain's getting larger, they say, because I'm reading articles telling me where the smart money's going, where the dumb money's going, why I should pick what, all the information I could possibly want or need to dominate a sports book near me. Right now, you go to getaction.app/Pat, and you can track all of my bets, you can track all of Diggs' bets, and basically, you can become a better bettor all around. Place your bet at your sports book, then place your bet into your Action Network app and track it all day. You see the green dot, things are looking good. See the red dot, things aren't looking good at the moment. Find Green Dot City by reading all the incredible articles on there. And also track your bets in fantastic fashion. Also follow how other people are doing. Become a better bettor with the Action Network. GetAction.app/Pat. Let's make all of the monies this year gambling on sports.
How'd Bill Burr find you? Well, because you always hear these stories of like Seinfeld sitting in the back, or like Jeff Foxworthy sitting in the back of a thing and being like, "Hey, I think you're really good. I'm gonna take you on tour with me. We're gonna make $1 billion." Like that happened with the Blue Collar Comedy Tour. Yeah. Jeff Foxworthy was in the back, I guess, with Bill Engvall, Ron White. He found him. It was like, "Hey, let's go on tour, Larry the Cable Guy." Same thing happens with Seinfeld. I guess he like sees somebody and does the same thing. Is that what happened with Burr?
So in 05, Burr came in, and it was his first weekend of like selling out a comedy club, and they came for him. It was like Opie and Anthony crowds, and it was like 400 people and Rascals in Montclair, New Jersey, and I was featuring. And I went second. I did like 25 minutes, and I did really well. I was super nervous. It was one of my first big gigs coming up, and he goes, "Hey, man, were you the other guy on the show?" He's like, "I didn't see it. I heard it." And he was like, "You ripped." And I go, "Thanks." He goes, "I'm going to be by the stage on the next one and watch you." And then he just tapped me. He goes, "Man, no pressure." And I was like, "Oh, man."
Hey, no pressure.
And and then he watched me, and I had a really good set. I had a really good weekend. And he goes, "Hey, man, you're really funny, man. People relate to you, blah, blah, blah. Let's keep in touch." And then he referred me to a room in Jersey, and I did the room that he referred me to in 07, and I thanked him. And I go, "Man, it went amazing." He goes, "Next time I'm at that room, you're going to open." And I told him, I said, the 2000 Patriots, this is the first thing that bonded me and Bill.
He's a big Patriots fan.
Yeah, but the first thing that bonded, but he can't take the compliments, So here's what bonded us. I go, "Dude, that 2007 Patriots, the best offense I've ever seen." And I was actually at the game where the Giants tried to stop him from going undefeated in the regular season. And he's like, "Oh, Verzi, you know, you don't know what." And I'm going, "No, they're the best team. Like, this is the best offense I've ever seen." And that made him and me have this sports bond. And then it just slowly built from there. You know,
that's awesome.
But the cool thing about Bill was Bill never gave false hope. Or lied about anybody's set. And he remembers saying that the lady at the Mitzi Shore, rest her soul, she was the person who would pass you at the Comedy Store. And she would just be like blatantly honest. And she said the worst thing you could do for somebody is give them false hope or like lie. So I remember opening for Bill in like 07, 08, and I'd be like, "All right, man, I had a good set. What's he gonna say?" And he would just go, "Hey, man, nice job this weekend. Good job. We're going to work together again." And I'd be like, "All right." And then slowly, like after like maybe around 2010, 2011, I'd be like, "Man, that bit you got, that's really funny." And then it got to the point where like 2013, he was like, "Dude, watching what you're doing is a beautiful thing." And then I'll never forget, somebody called me up and somebody goes, "Bill Burr just called you a beast on his podcast." And I was like, "Get the fuck out." And it was like, because we were just, I mean, he's my son's godfather. Yeah. I mean, he's family to me now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but we kind of kept work, but then it started to get to, and then when he wanted to be a part of my special and believed in it like that, it was just kind of surreal. But like, to have that relationship with him, I'm glad that it's that way. I'm glad that it was that way instead of just being all the good shit. Like, just know, man, you got to, like, you want to get good, you got to work.
Yeah.
You know, you
got to
work.
I love that type of story. I got a chance, obviously, to get drafted to the Colts with Vinatieri. If it wasn't for working with Adam Vinatieri every day, there's no way I would be where I'm at, right?
It's crazy.
Watching him work, listening to the feedback, seeing how he handles situations both on and off the field, it taught me more than any class could ever teach me.
Eddie Murphy with Chris Rock.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like everybody who's ever had a chance to really make it has always been a chance to watch somebody.
Yeah.
When your guy is the top of the mountain like Bill Burr, in a world that is involved with egos, right? Because there's a lot of egos in the show business world. A lot of egos, especially with microphones involved.
Of course.
Is Bill Burr just like a humble dude all the time?
The best.
It seems like he really is.
No, he's the best. Like, that's who that guy is. But I will tell you this. It also puts me under a microscope and hurts me in one sense. And the one sense is that since it's him, people will, like, I've had people come out to a club and go, "I wanted to see what the fuss about you was with Bill to see." And they kind of have that cross arms like, "Is he funny?
Prove it."
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I've had people come up and say that. So it is a little bit more under a microscope. But then like having I had an amazing time in some of the biggest venues like the Garden, all these places. And people are like, "Oh, you know, I get it. And I understand why he says that about you." But you could definitely feel some people going, "Oh, that's Burr's guy. Well, let's see." You know, you could feel it.
Yeah.
You know, you could definitely
feel it. I met Bill Burr. And the first thing I said to him is, "Mr. Burr, I'm a massive fan. You would hate me if you ever got to know me, but I love you." And he goes, "Why would you say that?"
That was, see that, Tim? He can't. Yeah.
You go, why would you say that? I'm like, I got a lot of energy. I'm super positive. I just feel like I'd be a guy that you would roast. He was, but I love what you do. He's like, all right. And he just like walked away.
I'd be a guy that you would.
And I did a.
That's great.
I just changed my Twitter bio a couple after watching Paper Tiger. I made him chuckle twice in one night. And it was a big night for me. I did the intros for Rough and Rowdy, and there was this guy that went to jail, or he was the second of his. He Rough and Rowdy is this amateur boxing.
Oh, didn't he? He did like commentary.
Yeah, was commentary. Yeah. And I was in ring announcing, and this kid was like Sam Smith the second or something like that. Just some slapdick. And I was like, I made an entire introduction about Sam the second. Second. There was one before. He wasn't worth a fuck. And now we have the second. And it's an open mic in an arena, right? So I'm introducing this in a boxing, and all you hear is the cackle build. And I was like, oh my God, what a moment. Can somebody clip that? Can somebody please clip that for me,
that's
Bill Burr?
Great.
Yeah.
That's such a funny way to introduce yourself to somebody. Like, hey, it actually goes to show how down to earth. Like, you're just like, listen, dude, you ever met me, you'd hate me. But I just, it's so disarming that it's like, I'm never going to bother you again. So this interaction is over after this.
That's exactly what I said to him.
That's so great.
Because I am such a fan, and I knew he would absolutely despise everything that I was about.
I saw a clip of you do stand up in one of the clubs in Indianapolis, and you told a story that killed. And I remember going. I'm hand to God. I'm not just saying this because I'm here. I remember being like this guy's got like this guy could tell a story. Like this guy's funny, and you had like the presence about you. I'm being dead serious.
I appreciate that. I do. Yeah. I've now this sounds very arrogant, especially to a stand-up comedian. No. I've done like 18 shows. 15 of them have been theaters. And every single time I go up there, I have no fucking idea what's about to happen. And then when I come off, it's always like, pretty good. And then then whenever I watch guys that are actually good at stand up, I'm like, I should never do that, what I ever did again.
Imagine you did like 10 a week.
I don't know how you guys do it.
Like if you did 10 a week, or even if you did, let's say you did 5 professional shows every week for like 3 months, afterwards you'd be like, oh, I'm starting to, something's happening.
Yeah, but I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you deliver the same shit with the same zest multiple times. Like for me, if I tell the story twice on a stage, I'm done with it. By the time I did one tour through Indiana, it was the I-69 tour, which is great number, but also an interstate that runs through Indiana, and we just kind of hit 4 theaters along there. And by the 4th night, I was like, this story sucks. Like, what are these fucking people aren't going to laugh at this? And then while I'm telling the story, like a laugh comes, and I'm almost at the point where like, why the fuck are these people laughing at this?
Yeah, because you get tired. That's the thing. And that's why it's important for us to, you know, kind of get stuff out. Like, that's why when my album was done, I was like 3 months, I had nothing. When I'll Say This was done, I'm like 3-4 months went by, Pat, and I'm like, dude, and then what happens is you got to get like the building block. So I look at it like a house and the foundation. So the first piece comes and then you just build up on it that way. But yeah, you got to get rid of it. What sucks is you have to deal with the bombing. So, and a lot of comedians, I did my special at the Terrytown Music Hall, and a lot of comedians came out. It was like 1,000-seater and it was great. It was a great time, but it went well and it went on Comedy Central. But when I would go into the clubs after that, younger comedians that were there would come in the back of the room to maybe watch. And now I'm like, I can't do that. I'm not doing that because that's done. So they got to watch me eat shit. And then slowly it'll just trickle out. You'll be like, oh, he's working on shit. But you're like, yeah, like, oh, man,
Mercy fucking sucks. I watched him.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm trying to do comedy, but I saw Verzi. If that motherfucker's getting money.
It's and that's all that's in your head while you're doing it. You're going, oh, my God, these guys are looking up to me now. Some of these younger guys are looking up to me now because I'm starting to get the steps that they want and that I worked hard for now. But then they know. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, that one thing's going to be something. And then fast forward 3 weeks later, you're like, I want them back in the room. Now watch. So, and then it builds.
So that's the Gary Goldman thing. I watched him on Thursday night on his first show, and then I watched him Saturday night on his last show.
Really different.
He I don't want to say he sounded like shit on Thursday, but there was a lot of question marks Thursday. I was like, why is this guy so Gary Goldman? I was like, you know what? I'm going to come back on Saturday. He had just filmed a special, I guess. So on Thursday, in front of an Indianapolis crowd, he was literally just trying to work through things. And by Saturday, he had it figured out. I was like, oh my God, this is an entirely different show all of a sudden. Yeah. Comedians' brains are an incredible one. It really is. And the fact that you enjoy sports is fascinating to me because so much happens in sports that are funny. Right?
Yeah.
And then there's some situations that are just like completely asinine. For instance, Antonio Brown, this guy, it's sad. We're at the point where I think everybody agrees that it's a sad situation, what's happening with Antonio Brown. It's like, golly, man, one of the most gifted athletes of all time, one of the best wide receivers to ever play the game, just can't get out of his own way, it seems like. And at this point, he has done officially. I hope he gets life in jail, right? But if any of it's bullshit or whatever, and then all the other drama that he's bringing, I hope he figures it out. It's a sad situation. I honestly don't know what to do with
it. I was actually talking to a couple of people, Burr, too, and I have a theory. I have a theory on it.
Okay.
I think because if you watch the progression of him, because he was like a lot more tame than Odell. When Odell was on the Giants after a while.
He was the crazy one.
He was the one, and then I would watch, you know, the straw that was the end was when Saquon Barkley was calming him down.
Yep.
When I saw a rookie having to go up to him on the sidelines and calm down and melt down, I'm going, you know what? Get him out.
You guys kind of hated it, Odell, at the end, right?
It just got to the point where it was like mental breakdowns and crying and yelling, and then it got to the point where it was like enough. Like, and then, but watching Saquon be the voice of reason to a guy that's been in the league that long, and then people like, hey, Antonio Brown a little bit, I'm going, not really, I'll take that guy. Mm-hmm. But after that hit that he took from, was that perfect?
Yeah.
That hit, and then I think one other one, and I started to notice, and as it got long, I'm going, I think something, man,
he's lashing out irrationally.
And the way he talks in interviews now, the way he's even talking, you're going like, doesn't sound the same. Listen back. Like, it's something, I think so, and it's sad, man.
It's really sad.
It
is, to watch, too, because this is one of our, listen, when I say our, I mean, like, somebody who's played in the NFL, got to the NFL, is one of our premier guys.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Antonio Brown is a fourth-round draft pick, I believe, or something like that, out of
Central Michigan.
Worked his way up to be a stud, top receiver in the game, and then now it's just watching everything around him just come crumbling. The thing that worried me was whenever that John Gruden thing happened, the phone call, whatever team he had around him filming everything, they couldn't wait to get that video out. You know, they couldn't wait to get that video out. Like, and whenever you're trying, it seems like you almost become a magnetic force to drama whenever you're profiting off of drama. So whenever you're releasing dramatic YouTube videos and things that are not great, it almost feels like more gets dumped into your life, and it's almost like it becomes something you can't get rid of or away from. And I feel like that's happening in Antonio's life. The people around him are profiting off of this drama, I think. So at that point, it's just like, let's Real Housewives this thing. Let's do as much shit as we possibly can. It's like, God damn, though.
Well, imagine this. Imagine being like, all right, dude, the balloon's going to come down over there. I want the camera. When the balloon comes down, I want the camera. You're going like, what? Dude, you just got to a new team and you're worried about landing a hot air balloon on the thing. And it's like, I agree with you. To have like a team of like a television team there. Oh, yeah. It's sad, man. It's bad. I don't know if he's going to get another job now.
Cause if he would have had at least one person say like, listen, you can go after Big Ben, you can go after Shannon Sharp, you can do anything. Like, that's not that big of a deal. You probably shouldn't do it. But if you're taking shots at Kraft, like, who the fuck else is going to come get you now?
Yeah. Probably don't take shots at the owners.
Right.
Which, by the way, low hanging fruit there to go after Kraft for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can understand why he took a swing at it. But at some point you would hope somebody in his team is like, let's try to make some money. Let's try to make money from something or somewhat. And I think he's going to have to disappear for a little bit. I said this on the radio show. You know how, like, actors, they go to rehab, whether it's like sex rehab or this rehab. Really, it's just them disappearing for a couple months so they can come back and say, oh, I had a little getaway, a little stay away.
Yeah.
I think that type of thing has to happen to Antonio. I think he has to like disappear for a little bit and come back on the other side.
Do you think mid-season, after the investigation, a team will try to pick him up? Or do you think it's going to be a little time?
It's been interesting with these NFL investigations. They said they talked to somebody for 10 hours or whatever, and they said, if we find anything that warrants suspension, we will suspend them. They keep saying, if we find anything, and they just got done with that 10 hours of investigation. So you would think that's the NFL saying, with the first, we weren't able to find anything that's suspendable here. And the next one, there's another one coming. There's a couple of different investigations. If it comes back all clean, there is somebody who's going to have their job on the line who's like...
That needs a receiver.
That needs a receiver. Yeah. Not just a receiver, by the way.
This kid, yeah.
I mean, he's fucking the guy, which is what makes this all even more so sad, because you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars this guy could potentially go earn if he just keeps balling out at the level that he does, especially with his fitness level and how hard he works and which is what everybody says. I don't know for sure, but I would assume that somebody will take a swing on him if all the investigations come back clear. If anything pops up, though, anything at all, he'll be on the Colin Kaepernick list immediately, where they're like, well, don't bring him in. It's too much of a distraction.
Can I ask you a question? Because you asked some questions about comedy. I need to ask you something, because I'm fascinated. Everybody always says comedians want to be musicians, right? Comedians want to be musicians and rock stars want to be... No. If I didn't want to do this, I'm an athlete guy. Like, the only... I don't get starstruck, but, like, if Jordan came in here, I would shit myself. You know what I mean? Like,
Jordan probably wouldn't talk to you, by the way. I've heard.
No, you know, I've heard. That's probably why I'd shit myself. But no, like, you know.
Oh, this guy. Oh, I'm such a fan. Don't even say hello.
But I guess the question is, because you're on the sideline standing there and you're watching.
Yeah.
You're watching the Julio Joneses. You're watching these guys. Is it that fast and violent where it's like, if I got hit by, because that's what I think about. I'm just like, if now they're doing the stat of like, he just ran 21 miles an hour.
21.8 or something. This hard man, this guy I'd never heard of before. Mecole Hardman.
I had a buddy. I have a buddy at the NFL Players Association, and they did the year Julio Jones and Von Miller got drafted. They did a party here at Cipriani's, the NFL, and it was the top 10 picks and their families and food and drink, and Snoop Dogg did a private concert, and like, I got, me and my wife were there, right? And dude, Marshall Faulk hit on my wife. That's another story. But anyways.
Okay, how did it end up?
No, just, he just, I mean, maybe not hit. Maybe that's him saying hi to her, but I didn't like it. He probably did it. You know what? I take that back. He didn't hit on her. He said, hi, how are you? And I said, how dare this Hall of Famer? How dare this Hall of Famer be nice to my wife?
Don't you fucking ask her.
Yeah, I'm like cursing Marshall Faulk. They're like, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. He complimented her shoes.
Yeah, you're overrated anyways. Jeez.
Yeah, that's such a typical guy. Like, I think he hit on my wife. Why? Did he do it? No, he didn't do anything.
Hey, that happens at comedy clubs a lot.
Yeah.
Whenever couples come, and if you make the wife laugh or the girl laugh, the guy automatically hates you. Like, yeah, you're not that funny. I've seen it happen.
I had a girl in Pittsburgh put her hand on my stomach and chest and go, we're going to that bar there. And this giant guy is just staring at me in the face. And I'm like, dude, I did nothing. I did nothing.
Hey, that guy's probably Italian, wears affliction, and was ready to knock you the fuck out. That's Pittsburgh.
But I said congratulations at this party, and I touched Von Miller right here. And it literally felt like touching this side of the it was like touching a cinder block. It was, and I'm going like, that guy's gonna run a 4.5 or a 4.4 whatever and be that big and strong.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking like that, at what point were you like, I'm glad I'm kicking? Like,
So whenever I kicked in college, you kick off in college, and whenever you kick off, you watch, right? Everything happens in front of you. So then I kicked off in the preseason of an NFL game, and you kind of watch, and it was like college speed there. And then the first time I kicked off in a regular season, I kicked off, and I saw these dudes who were trying to provide for their family, trying to make money for a living, trying to do everything. Whenever they were sprinting down, this is back whenever you're allowed a four-man wedge and there were still wedge busters. Whenever I was jogging down the field and I just saw a guy that was a teammate of mine just run probably a 4.6 40 with complete reckless abandon, dive headfirst into four human beings. Oh, and it was just like, poof, poof, poof. And I was standing on the field. There was a real moment of like, oh, fuck. Like, I should not be on the field right now. So anytime you saw me during a kickoff, I removed myself from any potential situation. And then you get into the playoffs. And the playoffs is just like another gear. So you go from like fourth to fifth gear. Yeah. And then in the Super Bowl, I kicked off the Super Bowl. That is just like, you might as well just put that thing on autopilot. People are trying to pop their hamstrings sprinting down the field.
Did you kick it as hard as you like, did you?
Me? No, I was just trying not to whiff on the fucking Super Bowl. All those flashes. I thought I was going to whiff. I thought my dick was out there for a little bit. all these pictures. But for me, I'm just trying to do the same kick, trying to stay calm. But watching these humans just try to make money for their family all crash into each other, that was the moment where I was like, oh, these fucking dudes are next level, man. Because you got guys 250, 260 running 4.4.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And on special teams, they don't have to be the smartest guys. They don't have to know the playbook. They don't have to know the defensive playbook, the offensive playbook, which sometimes holds some freak athletes back. On special teams, it's like see ball, get ball. We had a couple guys that were straight up killers. I mean, straight up killers. There was this kid from Florida. 4-4 Bulldog, my motherfucking pet, Antonio Morrison. That dude, I don't even know if he knew there was a football field or football on the football field at some point. He was the guy who was like, hey, we need that dude to get taken out on this return or everything runs through that guy. And he'd just be like, gotcha, dog. And it would be a kickoff. And that dude, I don't know if the person on the other team knew that 44 was about to come basically decapitate him, but he found out relatively quickly, and it was just on. There was this other kid from Kentucky.
Man, that's nuts.
This kid from Kentucky was like, I forget his name, Andrew, Grill. He had a big grill in. He was like 255, kind of chubby, kind of had a bad body. Okay. I think everybody didn't think he was disciplined. But man, you put him on a kickoff team, he was a killer. And it was like in the huddle, we had like a middle onside kick where I would dribble it to myself. And we called it one night against Houston Texans when there was nobody in front of me, so I got a chance just to retrieve it myself. But when we put it in for another time for the end of the game where they thought people could be in front of us, he was the guy that was going to go take out the people that were at the line, and I was going to pick up the ball behind him. As soon as we put it in, it was like first quarter, maybe opening kickoff. He like came over to me and he had like this look in his eye. He was like, call that dribble, dog. I'll go decapitate them fools. And I was like, I think we're kicking it deep. But
I'm going to start a podcast.
But that's the guy you want on your side. But those dudes, there used to be some real goons on special teams. Back before, whenever there was the wedge and everything like that, whenever big hits were like almost being like encouraged,
yeah,
we had some goons that I was so thankful were on our side. I was like, I love this kid so much. I think he got a couple of DUIs and stuff. I don't know what he's
How many coaches did you play for?
Jim Caldwell, then Chuck Pagano. So just two. Yeah, but I was through my rookie year, we're almost completely undefeated until we chose to lose to the New York Jets and then the Buffalo Bills. And then we ended up in the Super Bowl playing the Saints. Drew Brees beat us. And then a couple years later, we were almost completely defeated whenever Peyton was out, and we were sucking for luck. So I've kind of got a chance to kind of see the entire wave of the whole thing, but only two coaches.
Okay, and you played with Luck?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's that kid. I thought he was going to have a monster year this year. Do you think he's done?
I do.
He's going to come back?
I do. Strictly because he has so much off the field.
Does he?
He's like, I think he's the number one architect, like recruit in the world.
Probably.
Let alone his dad is running the XFL now, let alone all the businesses his family's involved in.
Okay.
He's a super brilliant man. I mean, he is next level.
Nice guy?
Nice. Too nice. Too nice of a guy in my eyes. Like, yeah. His rookie, because I came straight out of watching Peyton Manning kind of run the team. He was the general manager of the team. So if practice wasn't going good, like, Peyton would start over practice. If Peyton wanted to do this, Peyton's doing this. If Peyton wanted you on the field, you're on the field. Wanted you off the field, kick you right off the fucking field. Like, that was the type of, Peyton was the GM of the team.
Wow.
Bill Polian, obviously a brilliant man, was able to draft well. But if Peyton wanted something, it was happening, right? It was like almost direct line to Ursay. Here we go. This is how this is all running. We were on Peyton's team. So it's kind of weird being his friend because you never knew who you were talking to. Like, hey, Peyton, I'm about to go to fucking bong outside. Is he going to laugh or is he going to cut me for that? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you don't really know what you were getting. I think that was kind of a tough thing, which I think a lot of his teammates, yeah, you never knew who you were talking to because he was that guy, right?
Yeah.
Great teammate, though. We're That's talking about so a guy cool. that drank beer with people, good teammate. Luck was just so nice. So, like, if the offensive line sucked, he wouldn't be like, hey, pick it the fuck up. Like, Peyton would be like, hey, need you to do this because if you do this, I'm better. If I'm better, our team's better, everybody's happier. Andrew was too nice of a guy. He didn't have that in him to be an asshole until later, I think, maybe after I left. I'm not sure.
Right.
But I think if he would have done that earlier, he's healthier. He's probably still playing. So almost his niceness is almost what was ultimately his Achilles because he didn't force people to be held accountable as much.
Hey, I told you this conversation was going to be a good one. Paul Verzi's the man. I'm enjoying it a lot. You know what else I'm enjoying? Learning about this website called DealDash.com. I'm pretty new to it. All right? I'm pretty new to it, but I'm enjoying it. What I've learned is this. There's hundreds of auctions happening every single fucking day at DealDash.com. And I'm talking about auctions for everything. They have everything you could possibly want. It's not a good place for me to be as a guy that, Insta-shops when I see something. And I want it, I buy it. It's not great. It's how I ended up with a wrestling ring at the house. It's how I ended up with an aquatic vehicle. And it's how I'm ending up spending a lot of money at this DealDash.com. But I'm spending a lot less than I could ever fathom because at DealDash,
You get a chance to win these things at very cheap prices. Each auction starts at $0. Each bid that happens on the product raises the price by 1 cent. The auction clock restarts from 10 seconds every time someone bids. If no new bids are placed before the clock runs out, the last bidder wins. If you're the last bidder and for 10 seconds there's nothing happening, you win no matter what it is. It starts at zero, raises up a penny every time someone bids. I'm getting some good deals on shit, and you will too, at DealDash.com. What you have to do is you have to buy bids, because the bids there are what are being placed to win the items. And right now, you need to get started on your bidding. You need some bids in your account. You obtain bids by purchasing bid packs. Bid packs come in various sizes, such as 200 bids, and bids are on sale this week between 12 cents to 15 cents per bid. Each time you place a bid, one bid is removed from your bid balance. When you run out of bids, you can either buy more bids or use the buy it now option to purchase the item at the buy it now price and get your big bids back from the auction. It's like a challenge. You throw your challenge flag, you get it right, you get the challenge flag back. If you've been bidding with somebody, I bid, you bid, we bid, we bid, I bid, you bid, we bid, I bid, you bid, bang, and you say, you know what, fuck it, want to buy it outright? Bang, all those bids come back into your bid bank. I mean, this is just an incredible experience. There's a 90-day money-back guarantee, no questions asked. Some customers are curious about the deals, but just don't enjoy the auction model. That's cool. Unlike many pay-to-participate auctions, you can first try us for free and see if you like it. We don't want to build a business on customers who try us once and then feel that it's not really for them. That's why we'll always honor a full refund for the first purchase for any or no reason at all within 90 days of purchase. Just ask and you'll get it, no questions asked. That's the Deal Dash promise. I mean, why wouldn't you try? You're about to get some shit for cheap. It honestly makes no sense. Get in there. Get bidding, get winning, and get cool shit. You're going to love it, just like I do. Right now, you go to DealDash.com and enter code America and start bidding. Remember, there's a 90-day money-back guarantee, and shipping is always free. Don't wait. Start bidding today. DealDash.com, code America. All right, let's get to it. I feel like this is going to be a regrettable website for me because literally there's just so much awesome shit on here. But going to be able to get things at a great deal. And that's what I'm all about. Deal-dash.com, code America.
I feel like those, like, you know, like we were saying, like everyone says Jordan could be an asshole. And it seems like a lot of great athletes have that, like, thing where you're like, yeah, I met him. It was kind of disappointing. Where, like, LeBron seems like a good dad and a nice guy. And it's like, you know.
Well, I think to get up there in that rarefied air, it takes a certain amount of selfishness, right?
Yeah. Yes.
To get up into that rarefied 100%. Air, it takes a certain amount of selfishness. You got to look out for you a lot to get up to the top, which, by the way, that's across all CEOs, executives. Yep. You're talking about business owners, athletes of all sports. To get to that rarefied air of being the greatest, there takes a little bit of selfishness, I think. Yep. And I would assume that LeBron trying to trademark Taco Tuesday is a good evidence of that. But aside from that, he does feel like he's the most human elite athlete of all time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, like, if you're super nice, even in comedy, they're like, we could, you know, pay him less. We could, you know, we'll give him a shittier week. You know, it's like, you got to be a little bit like, as soon as I got to a point in comedy where I could say no to gigs, things,
I'm missing a production meeting right now as we speak. This conversation's too good.
Oh, dude.
I'm missing an ESPN production meeting. Like, people that are listening know that I'm currently missing a production meeting for Thursday night's game, Navy versus Memphis. Sorry, I know nothing going into that meeting, though. I have no idea what we're supposed to talk about.
Yeah. How funny if they'd be like, wait, go to what he missed us for. And it's me and you going, Jordan's an asshole. Pat got fired from ESPN for shitting on Jordan and talking about Andrew Luck for 20 minutes.
No, by the way, I've never met Jordan. I have met Scottie Pippen, though.
Yeah.
And is much better golfer than people say. Scottie Pippen holed out on me from like 85 yards out to fucking make eagle to bury
you
my...
You golf?
No.
Okay.
But I swing the club.
Yeah, you swing the club.
I swing a club. And I think it was very obvious down in the Bahamas that I'm not great at golf. I got beat by Scottie Pippen in this NBA versus NFL thing. And I just got fucking murdered in the whole thing. But we won. I am an undefeated golfer. I'm undefeated. I have a championship belt and everything. Me, Aaron Rodgers, and the boys took down the NBA, Scottie Pippen, Jerry
Smith. He came to a show. I met him.
Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
Good dude.
He came to a show. He's a big comedy fan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He and I could tell he didn't want to. He wanted to keep hanging. He was like, he was cool, man.
I love Aaron Rodgers. He's a good friend of the show.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah. He has a lot. He told me down at that golf tournament. I was like, why don't you ever talk more to anybody? And he was like, well, this guy, he gets like misquoted a lot. Things get taken out of context. So he said his whole life motto is kill him with indifference. Which is a hell of a fucking he just doesn't respond to anything. They're like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is the worst brother of all time. No answer. Oh, Aaron Rodgers is the greatest quarterback of all time. No answer. It's just always just.
Just, yeah.
Just does his thing. And they look like they're a good team this year.
I thanked him. How funny is this? This is how much of a Giants fan I am. He came to a show and I go, hey, dude, can I just say something? I go, I'm a Giants fan. I go, thank you. That pass you threw against the Cowboys on the sideline to kick that field goal and have that place file out like a funeral. Thank you. And he just goes, yeah. And he goes, yeah, we beat him this year, too. But just
so
calm.
So smooth, by the way.
No, just calm. Like I was like, you know, he was happy that I'm a Giants fan who was happy that he beat my rival, that he was just like, oh, we did it again. Like, that's how great of a guy.
Hey, by the way, yeah, we did it for you again this year.
Yeah, by the way, we did it for you again. No problem. And, he's a very, like, calm demeanor. Yep. You know,
then when he speaks, it's always just like very well thought out, but there's zero inflection. It's just he's a dry sense of humor human, which not a lot of people can get. Yeah. So it can be misunderstood.
Yeah,
by
they
people.
Just think he's a prick.
Yeah, exactly. When it's complete opposite. Actually.
Right.
Like it's actually the complete opposite.
He's got like a good sense of humor and he's like a goofball in a way, but he just kind of, you know, seems like he laughs at silly stuff.
So do you know how everybody was burying him and LaFleur for their relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was Coach LaFleur.
Yes.
Everybody was burying him. So the first time he really spoke about it was on my show. So I was like, how are you and Coach LaFleur? Everybody's talking about you two hating each other. He's like, well, he's taking a bunch of average Joes and he's really making us believe in ourselves. And he took it to a dodgeball reference for Peter LaFleur. Was his answer for this massive. Yeah, it was beautiful. I just started crying laughing. I was like, ah, it's fucking brilliant.
Oh
right
my
there.
God, that's so great.
Yes, it's brilliant.
Like to know that and to do it like that.
Live too. He knows everybody wants to hear this answer too. Everybody on earth was just listening in, like, what the fuck did he say? He hates that coach, doesn't he?
And I love the mustache he did for Happy Gilmore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My fingers hurt.
Now your back's going to hurt. It's just the landscaping duty.
Where can people see you be hilarious at?
Oh, man, this weekend I'm doing four big shows. Gotham Comedy Club, man, one of my favorite clubs to headline, my home city. Did it last year. It was a great time. Doing a completely new hour for my special. I'll be there this Friday, September 27th, two shows, and this Saturday, the 28th, two shows.
Well, I appreciate you so much for stopping
by. Dude, man, you're the best, man.
No, you're the best,
Yeah, I'm
Paul.
glad we got to hang, and, you know, I appreciate it, man. Hey, great to meet you.
Ty's an owner of the Packers.
Yes, I am.
Are you?
That's actually what the mustache is for.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, Rodgers not shaving it until the Packers lose.
I went to Lambeau. It was on the list. We went to Lambeau against the Lions last year, Monday Night Football.
The place is cool, isn't it?
It was real cool. It was real cool, actually.
The Lions at Lambeau?
The last Lions year? At Lambeau. Was it last year or the year before?
2 years
year
ago.
Before. He
I called
the game
last year. 31-0. Lions went into Lambeau and stomped a mud hole in the Packers.
Wait, was that when Rodgers was hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, second play.
I was at that game.
Second play of the game, concussion.
Remember when he got to surgery on the collarbone?
Yeah, that's not that one. This one he had a concussion, second play of the game, week 17. Nothing on the line.
Okay.
But people are saying, arguably, the greatest commentated football game in the history of football.
Undefeated since then, by the way.
Undefeated. The Lions are undefeated since then. There's a Lions fan in the headset. You just heard. All right.
Let's Thanks get for on. Having me, man.
Hey, Paul, you're fucking hilarious, dude.
You're the best.
Hey, Bill Burr presents good shit, I would imagine. I got to meet and shake his hand one time. Feels like that's an accurate thing. Follow him on the social medias, at Paul Virzi,
yep.
V-I-R-Z-I. You a Paisan?
My mother's Greek, my father's Sicilian.
We saw the Greek diplomat land at the airport that we landed at. I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
That's great.
Yeah, but I want to let you know, we almost got kicked out of our own country.
You just got so serious. You're like, dude, we passed a Greek restaurant. There was a Greek restaurant out here.
No, our plane landed, and there was 55 black SUVs with cops and everything. And we're like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Like, because it's all happening here.
Right now.
Everybody's from everywhere is here.
Yeah, so we're filming it, obviously, and we almost got kicked out of our own country for filming the Greek diplomat landing. The person was like, put the camera down. I was like, who gives a fuck? What's that guy going to do, kick me out of Greece? Like, they don't like being filmed. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Tell them to go back to their country.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Hey, they're in my country now, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Anyways, they deserve it. They're probably doing the Lord's work, if I had to guess. We are not. We are just doing stupidity on a daily basis. We can't thank you enough for listening. You're the greatest. Hashtag Endgame. Hashtag Endgame. Send me, Ty Schmidt, and at Paul Verzi something. If you make us laugh, you'll get some free merch. Sound like a good deal?
Great.
If they make you laugh, get some free merch. You'll just respond by going, haha. Only pick a couple, though. We are a small business. Let's not be giving away all the fucking shirts.
Bro. Yeah, everything's haha. You guys, Paul, we got 151 shirts.
Might be the first person that makes Paul laugh. Might be the first 10. We'll see how it goes. Thank you so much for listening.